Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor at the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Michael Taylor, owner of ShiftingShares.com and full-time trader. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm very good, thanks, John. How are you?
Not too bad. It's good to see you again.
It's been a few weeks. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely, absolutely. So since you were last on this this podcast, you've written quite a few articles for us, and perhaps we can talk through some of those today. There's one in this week's issue on the subject of market makers. Everyone's pet hate.
Everyone's favourite friend.
Absolutely.
Market maker.
Well, you know, you can't live with market makers and you can't live without them.
Yeah, exactly. They're necessary evil, unfortunately.
So we'll talk about that. And then we got an interesting little email from a reader this week about a particular chart, a company called Sylvania Platinum, which you took a look at. So maybe we can talk through that because it actually ties in nicely with the feature you've written. Tell us what you've been doing. It's been some interesting times on the markets. Maybe we start there.
It has.
What have you been up to?
Well, I'm trying hard not to lose money and sit on my hands. As I said a couple of months ago, I think a lot of the good trades are on the short side. Unfortunately, with a lot of the smaller stuff, you can't get the borrow. So it has been difficult. It's a hard market. As I said before, companies aren't getting funding. So anyone who's positive in this market, I think, is doing very well. I'm not having a brilliant year, but it's not the year to make money. If you look at 2016, 2017, small caps were on an absolute tear, did very well. Not the same at the moment, John.
Yeah, it's a bit tough out there. You mentioned raising money, and I know you said to me before we came in here that you've been looking at a company that has struggled to raise money as something you've been trading, Sirius Minerals.
Sirius Minerals, yeah, I'm short on this. I can't see how it's going to end unless it's significant dilution for holders. It really doesn't look good to me. I should have been short when they failed to get the bonds away, but I am short now from 4p and I'm going to increase it.
I mean, it's an interesting company and it's one that we've wrestled with over the years. Obviously, you're looking at it from a trading perspective, but knowing how you work, you've looked at some of the story behind it as well. I mean, it was one of those stories that it could have gone either way.
It could have, John. Yeah, and 2 years ago, if they'd have got the bonds away, it would have been great, but they didn't. And they're in this position now. The CEO comes along with his 1 million wage check and says bulletin boards should be banned because the people on there are sweatpants wearing punters, which isn't great considering 85,000 of his shareholder base are retail investors.
I mean, I was going to say, you know, the Sirius story, it was a potentially very exciting resource play, looking for, what is it, polyhalite, they call it.
I have no idea.
It's a fertilizer. It's a fertilizer, a potash derivative. But there were always complications with this project because it was in essentially a national park and there were lots of planning problems. So whilst there was something there, it was always going to be a difficult job getting this stuff out of the ground. And I guess that's the kind of binary situation you're playing here.
I think so, yeah. Who's going to give them money? Because they know that they're struggling and you can just wait till, you know, they need cash and then you just make them scream. I do think the project will carry on and obviously I'm from Teesside, so I hope that it does because a lot of people are going to lose their jobs and a lot of local investors are going to lose everything, which isn't nice. But I think the project may carry on, but the equity ownership of that project will be different. I can't see how it's going to happen. They need a lot of money, a lot of cash. It's going to be significant dilution. And I could be wrong. I definitely could be wrong. But I'm a trader, so I play the probabilities. What do I think is likely? And then I adjust my position size. I increase it if I'm winning. And I just play these probabilities over and over again. I mean, to me, it's just a ticker. I don't really care about the story. I just want to make money.
the story is what the kind of speculative investors in a project like this would be interested in, though. I mean, you know, you mentioned the chief executive and his disparaging remarks about bulletin boards and how much retail support this company really has had. I mean, it's been a favourite of retail investors. Arguably, they have believed in this company for a very, very long time and still do.
They've backed it really well.
You mentioned you're finding it hard to get borrow on certain companies, but not this one, because there aren't many people still believe in it.
Because there's plenty of people holding, so there's plenty of people to net off against and take the other side of the trade. So yeah, I think you'll be able to get borrow for a long time on this one, purely because so many retail are holding it.
Yeah. And it's when we were speaking earlier, you're basically averaging down, like as the project gets As the problems
become more exactly. severe,
then, you know,
yeah.
people think, well, you know, it's cheaper now than it was, I'll buy a little bit more.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's a bias, really.
Classic error, isn't it?
Classic
really?
Error.
What else have you been looking at?
Not much, to be honest. As I say, my biggest position's cash. I've been looking at a few companies, doing a bit of research, but I haven't found anything I want to invest in. So I'm happy just to weather the storm and see what comes.
Sylvania, should we turn to Sylvania?
Sylvania Platinum. Now,
because you are looking
company.
At this.
I am looking at this one.
So we got
a trade.
We got a letter from a reader basically asking us about the chart pattern and what it means. And you very kindly offered some explanation around your reading of it. Talk us through basically what he asked you and what you think here.
The reader had identified a head and shoulders pattern, which you can see in the chart. But to me, I look at volume and I look at candlesticks. And that tells me basically the supply and demand of the stock. All of the moving averages are going up. The stock is trending upwards. And it's the 150 exponential moving average. The price has hit that twice, bounced off it. So I would look...
Bounced off it going back up.
Bounced off it and gone back up.
Yep.
Support. So if the stock would come back there, if that was in my strategy, I would think that is a low risk to reward trade.
So you're
on board. But yeah. I buy breakouts at the moment. I buy strength.
We'll come on
and
to that,
short breakdowns.
So basically, I mean, the reader kind of, his view was that this is a bullish scenario.
I think it's a bullish scenario. Yeah, I mean, I did actually hold Sylvania at 7p and sold at 10p and thought that was a really great trade. But, you know, it's now 40p.
And your winners, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know, as a trader, it's hard. But that is one thing I do need to get better at, running winners. And
well, you talked about trading systems in one of your pieces for us recently.
I did.
Would this kind of thing fall into it? You know,
targeting
a certain level of profit rather than sort of adapting as you go along. I mean,
the problem for me is I've always relied on the stock market for income. And so the temptation to bank things rather than run them has always been there.
Yeah.
But definitely the money is made in the stock market by being long very good stocks. Things like ABDP, I had that at £2, it's now 26. A lot of money.
What's that?
Alex Best Dynamics.
Right.
Yeah. I think in tickers, sorry. But Jesse Livermore in Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, he actually says... The money was made in his sitting. And if you can be right and you can be patient, you will make a lot of money. Because if you're trading for a couple of points in a bull market, that's great. You can make money. But the real money is made by following a trend all the way up as the story develops and being right and making a lot of money when you are right.
Those stories often do come to an end, though.
They do, and you've got to get out.
And...
Yeah, but I mean, this is why you look at the chart and the price action. And when we talked about Burford before, I said that story was coming to an end because we had a lot of heavy volume on down days, which was institution selling. And as we found out afterwards, it was muddy waters shorting the stock. So the signs are there. Yes, absolutely. Stories come to an end, but if you follow the chart, you get little clues. And really, you should be de-risking on the way up because profit's not profit until you've banked it.
Well, that's but you're in banking some profit.
Exactly.
And continuing the trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a key strategy that Simon Thompson actually recommends to readers.
Oh, definitely.
That as you make significant gains, just take some money off the
table
and get a free ride on what's left.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, it's in the art of execution. The connoisseur takes a little bit off the table as it goes up because there's nothing worse than having... a really big profit that you've not benefited on from because you haven't taken some off the table, and then something disastrous goes wrong, like a huge profit warning or worse, a fraud. It's not profit until it's banked.
Especially important at the smaller end of the market where you know you can get some big gains very quickly on big
and you can get some big losses.
Big losses
well
almost
know.
As quickly.
Yeah.
should we talk about some of your features recently? You mentioned the breakout. You wrote a piece for us about trading this thing, the breakout. Tell us what that is.
You basically buy a stock when it breaks out of a previous high.
So you're looking at a range there that is stuck in.
You look at a trading range and you want to see the stock come out of that range, preferably on good volume, because that means people are buying it. And you basically run it up. And this strategy works because if you think about it, for a stock to get to a new high, it's got to have broken out of a previous range.
What helps shares break out of these ranges? What are the signs that that might be about to happen?
I mean, you can look at fundamental signs, or if you're a pure technical guy, you just look at the price action. But ideally, stocks with a catalyst, good stocks that are growing their earnings sustainably, they're backed by management. Not all of the classic, the darlings, the Fevertree, Burford, stocks like that, they all have to break out to a new high in order to make a new time high.
Is it like a momentum?
It's a momentum trade. Yeah, exactly. So some things that I like to do is I'll get long a stock and I'll average up. I very rarely average down because, well, it can be a good strategy. People do it. I don't do it. I'm not saying that it doesn't work. But to me, it's more risky than averaging up. If you average up, you're using those paper profits to create larger risk to the upside on the share. You're increasing your exposure through the profits already on the trade.
Yeah, funny enough, actually, momentum has been something that's been discussed a lot this year because obviously markets have been driven, particularly in the US, up and up and up, and momentum seems to have played a big part of that. But there have been questions over what happens when it comes to an end. And it always comes to an end. It does. And it's what Algie Hall looks at in his stock screen this week. But you know, as some companies lose their momentum, others step in to replace the trend.
Exactly.
And what Algie's looking at is actually companies that you would not expect to be momentum shares that are now sort of stepping in to do that. So it's been growth shares driving the momentum. Algie's now looking at its value. It's what you would call value shares that are doing it. So momentum takes on a new dimension.
Maybe. I mean, if value shares break out, I'll buy them. No, if it's junk, if it's even a fraud, then I'll buy it if I think it's going to make me money. I mean, and that's one mistake. One mistake that I've made is I've looked at a company that's breaking out. I've looked at the balance sheet. I've recoiled in horror. And then that stock's gone on to do fantastically well. And I've missed out. And that's a mistake on my part because I've placed too much emphasis on the fundamentals of the stock when really I'm getting paid by price action. So I should be focusing on the price action. But you live and learn. Nobody's perfect.
Are you buying in anticipation of the breakout?
No, when it's actually happened? I buy on the breakout when there's good volume. One recent stock that I missed was Blackbird. Now, that had gapped up several times and been sold off. So I didn't buy it this time, only it went from about 8p to 18 pence or something. So it did really well. And I wasn't on board because I let my previous bias not let me buy it.
Those old biases again.
Exactly.
You do it about them. Should we talk about market makers, which is the subject
Let's talk about market makers this week.
I mean, it has some relevance in terms of the response you gave to our reader about Sylvania, because market makers obviously affect the price of stuff a great deal.
Yep.
And, you know, some of these breakouts that you talk about, it's market makers that essentially make those happen.
They do.
Why do we hate market makers so much?
Because they screw you up. Is the short answer.
What do we do without them?
Well, I mean,
they're going to make a living.
They could do the job and actually make a market, but instead they make a market for themselves.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, like I say, it's, well, you know, everyone's going to earn a crust.
They do. But I mean, a lot of readers will know this when, for example, if there's been a profit warning and they think the stock is now a good buy, they try and buy online and it might be 30p. On the offer, and they can only buy it 33p or something silly.
33p being the price they're being quoted.
The price quoted online on their broker, yeah.
I mean, I that's quite odd, but you mentioned in your piece that there's a way around this.
There is
I found
a way around
it. It's a bit old school.
There is, yeah. So you can take a spread bet, which will use the price quoted online, or you can just get on the phone to a broker where the market makers are obliged to deal at that price quoted online. And then they'll fill you.
This seems like a very strange thing that you've got an obligation on through one channel and not the other.
It seems weird, and I questioned the London Stock Exchange on this about a certain rule in the handbook, and they told me it was nothing to do with them. And I told them, well, it's your handbook. Surely it is, but they were adamant that it wasn't. So I've never got an answer for that about why on one channel and why it's not on the other, but that's the way it is.
Doesn't matter. Just get on the blower.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the cost more.
It's an interesting... absolutely.
Yeah.
It's an interesting trick. And I guess this whole piece is kind of the tricks of kind of working out what's happening in terms of the pricing of the stock.
Yeah.
In terms of what's happening at the market maker, who is setting their pricing. I mean, explain what they do and how share prices are, in fact, set.
Well, one of the things they do is they like to widen the spread and drop the bid and try and shake a few people out. So they might run a stock down 10%, pick up some shares and run it back up and sell them, and they make a quick turn. Because remember, they're making a turn on each trade that they do. And a lot of people say that the market makers take positions and trade. Well, maybe they do, but they don't really need to do that.
But all they're really doing is, as the name suggests, making a market. So,
well, yeah.
So essentially,
they don't really need to take that risk of trading.
No.
Some of them might do. They might.
But that's not really what they're there for.
They're there to make a turn on the spread.
But they're there really to help investors. I mean, in the most basic
help level. Investors. Yeah.
Help investors.
I'm sure readers will love that. Yeah.
but without them, you couldn't buy a lot of shares.
True. Yeah. They take the risk in exchange for providing us the liquidity. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they hold all the cards, and we have to pay the prices that they set. Unfortunately.
So they hold all the cards. But what can we do to make life a little bit better for ourselves when it comes to dealing with market makers? It's not that many stocks that are only traded through market makers. I mean,
SETSQX. It's quite a few. So obviously, all the smaller mainly be SETSQX.
Not if you're trading FTSE 100 or
no.
Top level of
FTSE. No, you can just go direct onto the order book there, which is nice. But there's not really much volatility there unless you lever yourself up. But with stocks that are quoted on market makers, you can use tricks like spread bet. I'd be careful about that because obviously it's a leveraged product. You can get on the phone to a broker. You can watch level two and see how they're moving up and down. You can also check the RSP. So
RSP being the
retail service provider. Yeah, there's the network in there. You can request a quote directly from them and see exactly what is available in the market. Now, this will often be very different to what is quoted on level two. And the reason for that is that they can get away with it because what they quote on level two, most traders and investors are dealing online where they're not obliged to uphold those prices. They can charge whatever they want.
Mm.
So that's why they do it. But yeah, it can be helpful, and we can use dummy quotes as well. So we can request and see how much is available at a certain price, what they will offer. Generally, if you're getting bid for a lot of stock, so the market makers will buy a lot of stock from you. They're keen to have it. And if you can't buy a lot, then usually it means that is going to be a short-term price appreciation in the stock. And one thing I like to do on profit warnings and surprise RNSs to the downside is watch the price come down, wait until you cannot buy any stock at all in the ask and the market makers are really bidding for stock. Then that's the point to open a spread bet or get on the phone and take a scalp trade on that. And it is possible.
Scalp trade?
In and out very quickly, couple of minutes.
All right.
Yeah.
Not our usual fare on the Investors Chronicle.
No.
It has to be said, but
but it is possible.
I mean, you actually give a nice little works example here, a company called Anglo African Oil and Gas.
Yes.
Where the what market makers are doing has actually influenced how you've kind of read the situation and subsequently traded that share.
Yeah. So obviously the market makers set the prices and they react to the RNSs. So they've got to manage that opening risk. In this instance, I thought they'd opened it far too down based on, I think the delay was a couple of weeks, so it wasn't, I think they opened it
on a
couple of weeks delay on the drill, sorry.
Yeah.
And they'd open it really down, and I knew that a lot of people were in this share and were probably going to average down, and that if the delay was only a few weeks, people would take advantage of that dip to then sell. So I made a bet that the market makers had opened it up too far down.
So they've got to interpret the news that's come through.
Exactly.
And when the market opens, they've got to set the price that
exactly
they're going to start trading at.
And I thought they'd set it wrong, so yeah. I took a spread bet long and started closing it down as the price moved up. Now, that could have gone the wrong way, in which case I would have had to sell into a weak market. So it is risky, but there are moments where if you know the stock and you know the sentiment around it, you can make a bet based on the market makers being wrong.
That sounds like you, I mean, to be able to decide whether you think the market makers are wrong or not, you've got to, as you say, you've got to know the company a bit. So this sounds like one of those situations exactly. where sort of fundamental knowledge of a company and the trading situation kind of coincide and work well together.
It can help. I mean, if you think about it, market makers have got to cover a lot of stocks. That's a lot of stories that they've got to keep on top of. Sometimes they're going to get it wrong. Sometimes they get it right. But yeah, there is money to be made.
Sometimes you can beat the market maker.
Sometimes you can beat the market maker.
That's great to hear. Exactly. I think it kind of, there's a really nice chart that you've put together at the top of this page here about price spikes. So this is a price crunch, as it were, the one we're talking about here at Anglo African Oil and Gas, which you've been able to trade successfully. But obviously what a lot of investors are hoping for are price spikes. But there's kind of, I find it really interesting how this actually happens, how the price of a generally quite illiquid share in sort of the smaller end of the market can jump quite sharply. Because this does happen again.
It does happen, yeah. It's great when you're long and this happens.
How does it work? Explain how that process happens, where you suddenly get a small share shooting the mooner.
If you imagine you've got a stock with a really wide spread, that's because the market makers don't really want to deal in that stock unless they're getting a reward.
So the spread being the price at which you buy the shares, spread. The price at which you can sell the shares.
I mean, if there's no trades, they don't really want to deal in that stock. But what can happen is that there might be a surprise RNS that comes out where they might have not really read it and the market really loves the RNS. And they can buy, and the market makers will be forced to deal several times stock that they don't really have. So now if the market makers are short, they've got to cover that position like everyone else who shorts in the market. So what they need to do is raise the price and entice to tempt sellers. Exactly, yeah. John. And unfortunately for them, a lot of the time, punters jump on board spikes. They see a stock rising up, they get fear of missing out, they jump on board the trend. And the stock goes higher, it can overshoot massively. And eventually, when that buying appetite starts to die down, the market makers can open the spread, widen it, drop the bid, and try and shake it back down. And it's a really effective tactic. So they can actually cover the short when that buying appetite has died down.
The tree shake. Yeah, you started telling us about that. I think we've now got to the point where let's talk through the tree shake once more.
It's
you've got a nice, lovely little diagram here of how this works as well.
I have, yeah. So the tree shake will be when a market maker wants to get some stock. So it might be, as I said, they'll just run it down, take some stops out, because as I mentioned before in the article of stop losses, even if they can or can't see them, they're going to know where those stops roughly are based on a chart, like every trader does. So they'll hammer some stops, get the stock, run it back up.
So they're stopping people out?
Yeah, of course they are. I mean, wouldn't you do that if you were a market maker? I would.
No wonder you love them so much.
Yeah, well, it's funny because once I had a spread bet and I had a stop in, now the price somehow went all the way down to my stop, stopped me out, and then rose back up. Like, it sort of gapped down, took my stop out, and gapped back up again.
But they can't see where your stops are, though.
Well, a lot of people have denied it.
It was
odd. I don't use physical stops. I use mental stops.
Yeah.
Because it's just better.
You can just get booted out.
Exactly.
My colleague was actually saying, because, I mean, people would tend to have a tendency to set those stops at, you know, kind of like, you know, major bands. Like,
yeah, exactly.
10%, 20%, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, yeah, so I set them at 22.5% and still got stops at.
Well, yeah. I mean, what you'll see is a lot around the support area. You've got the people who place the stops bang on support, which is silly because you're basically asking to get stopped out. You'd have people place it slightly underneath and then slightly underneath, and then the price goes where liquidity is. So it'll stop a load of people out and then it'll jump back up. So this is why if you look at resistance or support levels, you'll see the price go through them and come right back down because it stops getting triggered.
They're not daft, these market makers.
They're not daft, no. It must be fun being one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because they look on the bulletin boards and you know, you've got punters saying, oh, the market makers are screwing us because the share price has gone down for years. But really, the stock has gone down because it's a terrible stock.
Well, we always get complaints about, particularly around Simon Thompson's companies,
yeah,
because obviously he covers smaller companies,
yeah,
which are very much in the sweet spot of market makers, and you know, he'll publish a report and very, very exactly. shortly afterwards the price has gone through the roof.
Well, they'll follow. So I bet they signed up to what I see looking at Simon Thompson's column.
I bet they are.
They are.
But you know, what we suggest to people is, well, let's just, you know, stay out for a little bit then. You know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these things, they come right back and then you eventually get to buy. But they know that people are going to jump on board. So what do? They gap it up or raise it. And straight away, they're in the money.
So a little bit of patience, maybe, if you're playing these sort of companies.
I mean, there's never any guarantee it's going to come back.
No, that's true.
But yes, generally, if you're going to play this game of getting on board early, you've got to take that risk sometimes.
But you don't have to buy everything.
You don't? No, absolutely. You don't have to buy everything.
So miss one, surely something else will come along at some point.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and you know, it's really helpful that you're putting this all together. Thank you very much. Well, it's turned into a little series.
This has happened
rather by accident, but it's very useful. I honestly think that whilst you know you're a trader, and a lot of this is designed to help traders who are potentially in and out very quickly. I think there's a lot of lessons that longer term holders can learn from this as well. You always want to.
I do think so.
Price.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, placing stops. Just don't place them in the obvious points, or don't place them too close. We talked about adjusting for position size to, you know, so you can take that risk of putting your stop a bit further out, because you know the market maker is going to hammer them.
Yeah.
Or someone with a big enough portfolio will hammer it down. Algos, things like that, they'll stop you out.
I mean, liquidity, you know, seems to be an important part of everything we've been discussing here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and often, you know, it's often, you know, if you're a longer term holder, buying illiquid stuff is potentially difficult, potentially risky. Mm-hmm. But it seems that like you can actually make a sort of virtue of that illiquidity sometimes here.
You can, because especially in the AIM and the smaller caps, the institutions don't really take part. So the prices that we see are set by retail investors, and retail investors sometimes have it wrong. So there's some people very successful in this business who find a business that is significantly undervalued, it's unloved by the market, and they'll just quietly buy and buy and buy, and you know, a year or two they make a load of money. I mean, it is possible.
There's a bit of value investing going on there.
It can be, yeah. But if you can find a stock, a growth stock, that the market hasn't fully appreciated.
Or may have fallen a little bit out of love with, because
it's
had a few disappointments along the way.
Yeah, there's money to be made.
Minerals, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I'm not convinced. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I could be wrong, definitely. We'll see how that story plays out.
Yeah, I honestly really do think it's a fascinating. Well, I think there's lots of lessons in Sirius for investors in resources shares generally. And I think a lot of what we're talking about in terms of the kind of mechanics of this market that you've covered in your articles, you know, I think more than anything, the resources space is where it's most applicable.
The resources space is tough at the moment. Yeah, definitely, because. Yeah, when capital markets are drying up and projects aren't getting funded and things like Sirius.
And oil is a dirty word.
It is at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, but some commodity prices are not exactly firing at the moment. Worries about global growth. I mean, it's, tough old space. I mean, have you recently, I mean, we talked about Sylvania Platinum, but is there anything else resources wise that you've looked at recently?
I don't follow resources much. I mainly follow stocks. So I keep an eye on the price of oil and platinum and things like that. Gold as well, which we mentioned before. Gold miners have been on a run, and if gold keeps going up, I mean, why not? We can trade them for breakouts when they break out.
But you don't care about the underlying?
Not really, no. No.
It's a refreshing change to talk about businesses in this way, or shares in this way.
Yeah, I mean,
Not businesses at all.
Well, I mean, as soon as you start ascribing emotion to them, they've got power over you. But if you just see them as instruments for volatility to go up and down like a video game, and you're not attached to them, you're not falling in love with the story, you know, all they are is just ticker codes to make money with, like trading chips.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What are you going to write for us? What are you going to write for us next?
I'm going to write a piece on level two.
Okay,
next.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of people think that level two is magic, but it's not really that useful. I mean, for investors who are you know, got a full time job, so they don't really need level two.
But, so level two is giving you live prices.
Yeah, it gives you live prices, yeah. But if you're sort of not trading, you don't really need level two. And with, as I said earlier, with market maker stocks, sets, quotes, and crosses, level two will give you the idea of what's there online, but what's behind on the RSP is often very different. But as I said, with spread bet, you can sometimes take advantage of that. So, for example, if there's three market makers on the bid and only one on the ask, you can sometimes trade off the last market maker by going long on a spread bet, especially if you can't buy in the equity market because the price to buy is much higher. You can actually get that price, the online price, with a spread bet, or you call a broker.
Goes back to
so that is, level two is useful for that, and it's especially useful on things like profit warnings and surprise RNSs, and also for putting your trades onto the order book.
All right. Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
A few weeks' time.
A few weeks' time, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Michael. No, it's really useful, I'd say. It's nice to get a very different perspective about how markets work, right, over and above the sort of more fundamental approach that that Phil and I usually take. So thank you. Good to have you, to have you in the studio again.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. We can move down to London, you say, as well, so we can get even more in the future.
I am.
Excellent. Excellent. Let me just talk you all through what we've got in the rest of the magazine. Lots in the personal finance and fund section, which they will talk about on their podcast tomorrow, including how you currency proof your portfolio, which is pretty important at the moment, given all the sort of volatility out there in the world of currency, which I assume you don't play much.
I don't play that. It's too hard for me.
Very wise. In the company section, as I mentioned already, Algae's looking at momentum. The sector focus is looking at auto retail and how it's potentially being disrupted by the internet. You know, you can now walk into Westfield Stratford and buy a car.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's mad. It's absolutely mad. Disintermediation. It's... Well, it's happened everywhere else, so will it happen in car retail? The usual tips, a few results this week, including one of our favourites, WH Smith, which Phil and I spoke about at length last week. Michael's obviously written the second feature, all the usual comments, including lots and lots and lots from Simon Thompson, fair old bit of news, and the cover feature, Brexit trick or treat. So we were supposed to leave the European Union on Halloween.
Yeah.
Which was behind this cover. Do you like it?
Well, I've actually muted Brexit on my Twitter.
So you're not going to pick up this one then?
I'm not going to. I don't like Brexit. I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't ignore it as investors. It is going to have an impact.
Oh, I ignore it.
Yeah, you're a trader.
Well, yeah.
but at some point, you know, once we start to see some light at the end of the tunnel, you know, investors are going to have to think about what they do, and I think that's particularly important for the UK market and what happens next there. Obviously, very depressed potentially as a result of all this political shenanigans. We've got kind of like a sort of a bull and bear case for Brexit in this week's magazine. Chris Dillo on one side and Neil Wilson, a regular contributor, on the other. Chris is more gloomy about the sort of more global indicators. Lots of horrible stuff going on out there.
Well, I tend to agree.
Yeah, so yeah, but you know. Got to be
optimistic.
If you're an investor, you've got to be optimistic.
I'm always bullish on a long enough time frame.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Thank you again, Michael, for coming in. And pick up the magazine and all good news agents. Brexit trick or treat. What could come next for UK investors when it finally happens? And we'll be back again next week. Thank you. See you later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.